views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hermco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hermco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the DC movement should be referred to Hermco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hermco Radio Network, I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
clean. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And yes, fresh topics aplenty we have tonight. Yeah. Amazing things going on out in the world. Talked a couple of weeks ago about money, about things happening out there, about how they're making money out of debt. We are basically financing our currency from debt, and it's just a wonderful thing. Everybody's really happy with this. Look at what happened today over in Greece. Isn't that a wonderful thing? The Greeks are now going to get bailed out to the tune of $1.2 trillion. By who? And that's the big question. Isn't it now? Union is by who? funny. Can hit the peanut gallery out here behind me asking. But here's the big question, folks. It is by who? You know, who is going to end up forking over $1.2 trillion? Well, at this point in time, it seems like the rest of the European community. Well, I got a little question for the European community. Have any of you asked where they are getting this $1.2 trillion from? Are they taking this from gold held in reserves at some bank in Munich, and they're going to ship it right over to Greece and say, here's $1.2 billion in gold. Have fun! Don't do anything else about it. Just have fun. Well, I'll tell you what. It doesn't look like it's really going to happen too hard here. There are already words coming out from different places. They don't like this. This down off the AP tonight by A.F. White. At least that's how I think you say his name. It's A-O-I-F-E. I bet you that's how he spells his name, folks. Alright. Enough of that. By the European Union halted the slide of the euro today and sent markets soaring worldwide in a gambit to be ultimately be seen as the moment Europe truly became a union. The sweeping cash injection was greeted with euphoria on Wall Street, where stocks rocketed to their biggest gain in more than a year. Still, the package did not resolve the basic dysfunction at the heart of Europe's monetary union. Governments can still spend recklessly and saddle their partners with the bill. The approval of shock and awe-level rescue package followed weeks of indecembered the euro and sent world markets plunging on fears Europe's debt contagion could spread well beyond Greece, where the crisis began several months ago. Right. For once, the scope of actions unveiled dwarfed previous leaks and speculation. This is Shock and Awe Part 2, and in 3D, said Marco Annunziata, the chief economist at UniCredit Group. Europe has unequivocally said, we will defend the euro's integrity, said Oliver Pirsch, executive vice president at Gary Goldenberg Financial Services in Suffern, New York. After frantic talks lasting early into the early hours of Monday, European officials agreed the 16 euro nations would put up $572 billion, €440 in new loans, and $78 billion under an existing lending program. The International Monetary Fund will pump in another $325 billion for a total package of nearly $1 trillion. Now, you gotta love this, folks. The European Commission is to raise the money in capital markets using guarantees from member governments and lend it to crisis-stricken countries so they can pay their bills. Many questions were left unanswered, such as how the money would be dispensed and on what terms. Of course, the question that isn't really being asked here is, where is it coming from? Once again, you know, the article goes on and on here, and I'll get back to it here in a minute, but these are the questions that are not being asked. Where is that money coming from? What are they selling? And this is where the European people have got to wake up. They have a chance here, okay? They are actually smaller than us, all right? There are many little countries there that are still sovereign countries. You know, no longer watching their state borders disappear and watching their state sovereignty go down the drain in some huge federal entity out there. They're still a little bit further apart. So the European people need to ask their government, exactly where is this money coming from? What securities will the European Union be selling? And who will they be selling them to? What will these securities look like? What are backing these securities? Excuse me, is it land backing these securities? Is it the promise of future debts that will be paid by taxing the people? Where is it coming from? What's happening? This is what needs to be asked here, and it is not being asked. What do we look at? Look, and again, still, governments can spend recklessly and saddle their partners with the bill. And that, my friend, is the big thing here. That is the big thing that is going on all around the world. Look at how the International Monetary Fund donating $325 billion to that. They go on talking down here about how the European Union and its members will be donating. Well, who are the members of the International Monetary Fund? Who are the biggest members there? Us. Maybe the Chinese at this point in time. Maybe the Indians, who are really growing strong. A lot of people aren't watching exactly how rich they're becoming. Out there buying up gold and silver and a lot of securities from a lot of different places. This is what really needs to be happening here, and it's not happening. You know, and how do they expect to be able to pay that debt off in the future? You know, if what they're paying off now, which is debt, so that the Europeans, so to greet their bills, which is exactly what it's, folks, make no mistake about it. You know, that is what needs to be looked at here. They are using the money to pay bills. Okay, these are bills for services that have, or products that have already been consumed. All right, that's the point. All right, you're still going to need a lot of these products and services into the future here. All right, just to get through your basic daily lives. You need things like food. You need transportation, you know, and you need to be able to work at it to make enough for this. But are you going to be going further and further into debt to get these needs? Will your government be doling it out, you know, as you need it, without any hope whatsoever of being able to get from you what they need in return in order to pay back this debt? You're already at that position. Why would you take on more debt in order to dig yourself out of this debt? This is the insanity behind it. Because what's going to happen is this debt here is going to come due. And what are you going to do? Take on more debt again? Where will the debt come from? Who is it out there that's, you know, making the promises that they will pay these debts? Think about it. When you're selling somebody a 20 or a 30-year bond down the road, you can understand something. You're not the guy who's going to be paying that off. It's going to be your successors. Who will your successors be? Are they going to be your children? You know, are they going to be people that will be having your job 20 and 30 years from now? Who? Exactly, you know? And do they know now what it is that they're going to end up having to do in the future and how they're going to come about coming up with this? Why is it that no one is asking those questions? That is the big point about all this. Of course, I want to say, like, a weaker euro and financial and economic disaster in Europe would hurt U.S. exports, and the U.S. Federal Reserve pitched in by agreeing to make dollars available to the European Central Bank in exchange for euros. The ECB will then loan those dollars at fixed rates to banks in Europe. The interest eventually goes to the Fed when it swaps the euros back for dollars at the same exchange rate as the original transaction. Well, who's going to guarantee it's going to be at the same exchange rate as the original transaction? The money markets might have something completely different to say at that point in time, and probably will if you really look at the bottom end of this. European banks need dollars to lend to companies across the continent. European companies with operations in the U.S. pay their employees in dollars and buy raw materials with the U.S. currency. Also, oil and other commodities are priced in dollars around the world. But because of the debt crisis, private banks in the U.S. have been leery of making loans to banks in Europe, hence the need for currency swaps between the central banks. Analysts warned, however, that the emergency bailout fund would do nothing to reverse Europe's soaring public debt and could even worsen it, same as it's doing here that most people just really aren't aware of. You know, they're talking about $12 or $13 trillion worth of debt when the debt is really $123 trillion. You know, think about that, $123 trillion. That's an unimaginable sum. You know, in a $14 trillion economy, you would think, well, geez, you know, we should be able to pay that off in, what, 8 or 10 years, maybe? Yeah, well, what are you going to eat in the 8 or 10 years while you're going to pay this off? You know, and who are you going to be paying it to, and what would they be using it for? Let's face it, everybody that you're paying it to has got their own bills to pay. It is a vicious circle of debt out there that can do nothing but get worse. Because you are only paying it off with more debt. Duh. You know, when do people stop and understand that when you're using a debt-backed currency, the only way you can take a profit out of it is by creating more and more and more debt. Profit, of course, being whatever it is you spend that currency on. You know, what did you receive for that currency? You know, this is it's a dangerous system out here, folks. They are playing with fire. And once again, you know, you got all these brain trusts around the world that just think, well, this isn't a big deal. I mean, we can handle this. Right. Right. You know, it's beyond me, folks. It really is exactly what these people think they're doing out there. You know, and our stock market, of course, responded on top of it. And you know what it is. It moves our stock market around. We've gone through this 100 times. The mutual fund managers and whatnot. The rumor mill gets cranked up out there. And the mutual fund managers start targeting certain stocks and say, it's time to buy. It's time to move on it. Let's move on everything. It's a general good day. They gleefully start buying stocks. Drive the prices up. We're using
more money to do it, right? What's the big deal?
It's just unbelievable what's happening out there, folks. Just completely and totally unbelievable. All right. Enough said about the European Union, the monetary situation. You know, it's. I don't want to keep on going harping about it, but the fact of the matter is this stuff is going to resolve itself someday, you know. My question, as always, will mankind be able to resolve this in a peaceful manner, or will he resort to violence? You know, the fact of the matter is, throughout mankind's history, economic systems have always resolved themselves. But up until this point in time, they've never been able to do it without a certain measure of violence. Will we be smart enough this time to do that? To see that the violence is unnecessary? Just certain things need to be done. We need to get back to reality. We need to start trading in commodities out there that actually have some real intrinsic value to them, something you can use. And I was talking tonight to a couple of folks who were, you know, very interesting people. One of them was telling me about how his mother was a banker and had been actually passed. She'd been a banker for many, many years. And in 2006, she ran into a huge problem. They removed her from that position in the bank and put her into some other sedentary position because she was denying too many loans. It seemed like the bank just wasn't doing enough business, so they had to get her out of there, get somebody in there that was just willing to write a loan to anybody. Very interesting. Hopefully, I do have a request in to do an interview with this person and find out all the circumstances and everything behind it. But it is as I had suspected. You know, the bankers of the world, in a frantic attempt to try to pay off the debt that they have accrued up to this point in time, are out there trying to accrue even more and more and more debt. You know, and it's a vicious circle, folks. It's a vicious circle. You know, as I've always said, you know, you cannot pay off debt with more debt and ever expect to pay off the debt. You just can't do it. It doesn't work. It's a catch-22 situation. You are chasing your tail. All right, moving on and on. Now we get some more news out here. Now listen, this is just a little bit, and I'm not going to go too far with this. We have someone named Elena Kagan being nominated for the Supreme Court. Now, I don't have tons of information on Elena Kagan tonight. I'm going to be honest with you. Homework on her was a little slight, and I'm waiting to see what else is going to come out over the next couple of weeks here. I will say this, though. From what I have seen so far, this is someone that Obama knows. Alright, so, look, I don't blame the guy at this point in time. You know, even if you doubt his motives and you doubt everything else, you gotta stop and think about one thing, you know. anybody out there that you don't know, you're not going to be able to predict what they're going to do. But if you do know, well, maybe then you can make some sort of honest predictions on how they're going to act and what they're going to do. All right, folks, I leave the rest up to you. Obama met her in Chicago at the University of Chicago Law School in 1991, because Obama was teaching there at the time. At least Kagan, well, the line says Kagan met Obama, who was teaching there at the time. One of the two of them were evidently teaching there. All right, now I'm not going to go down that aisle, what she looks like, blah, 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 blah. I've heard her call all sorts of names out there and whatnot. No, we're not going down that road yet. I don't know. Yep. Well, all right, we're not going to go there, folks. I'm looking at everything that I'm starting to see out there, and it's not what I want to get into on this program here tonight. That's for damn sure. However, what we can get into, let me see. Somehow or another, in my stack of stuff, I've gotten just a little lost, but I think we'll dig it out. Up and up. We are reaching into Russia once again. We're going to get together with them on a civilian nuclear process. Okay, well, sounds, you know, okay, almost, kind of, sort of. But, you know, one wonders, you know, what is going to be taking place back and forth on a civilian nuclear processes here. Look, we all remember what happened back at Chernobyl not too long ago. We also remember our own Three Mile Island here. Let me see here. Oh, here's the article on it. All right. Obama resubmits U.S.-Russia nuclear energy pact to Congress. President Barack Obama today resubmitted a U.S.-Russia nuclear energy cooperation pact to Congress after the deal fell into limbo following Moscow's conflict with Georgia in 2008. The agreement will allow U.S. and Russian companies to form joint ventures in the nuclear sector and gives the go-ahead for exchanges of nuclear technology between the two countries. Agreed between U.S. President George W. Bush and Russian G7 and signed in the following year, the agreement was never approved by the U.S. Senate and was pulled from consideration as relations with Moscow worsened after the Georgia War. Obama's move was the latest step of his effort to reset ties with Moscow, which have seen the agreement of a replacement for the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty and the two sides working together on the Iranian nuclear crisis. I approve the proposed amendment and have determined that the performance of the agreement will promote and will not constitute an unreasonable risk to common defense and security, Obama wrote in a memorandum. Well, what do you mean by common defense and security? You know, what do we have in common with defense and security with the Russians? Where do we have some sort of a pact or anything there? Are they part of NATO? No. Do we have some other pact going on with them that nobody else knows about here? What's up with that? What do we have? Extremism around the world, we got that in common. Will you be addressing that? Maybe in the case of Iran. Maybe I can give you the benefit of the doubt there. But let's come up with something a little more concrete here. Pretty please. Let's find out exactly what. Now, I personally, folks, as always, I fear the worst when I look at these sort of things. And the worst part of this is going to be that these two big giants, that the United States and Russia, will start having their companies get together and start dictating to the world how they are going to build nuclear power plants. Now, I'm sorry, but I don't think you're going to tell the French what they should be doing with nuclear power plants. Don't think you're going to be able to tell the Germans or the Spanish or anybody else that already has successful nuclear power plants running how to build them. You know, but this is always is what I fear. You know, governments promote monopolies. You know, they can't do anything, but once they get into any sort of business whatsoever, all they can do is either form or promote monopolies. That's what happens, all right? Look, government has a monopoly on the military already. That's the only place we want them to have a monopoly. We do not want them to have a monopoly on our energy sources out there. We do not want them to have a monopoly on our health care. We damn sure don't want them to have a monopoly on the creation of money and credit. All right? This is what we do not want. But I certainly see this as sort of kind of heading in the right line. And, folks, I promise I will keep an eye peeled for this year. All right. Now, what else we got in the stuff? Stop. Stack of stuff that's up here in front of me. Nope. I had other good things. Nope. That's that one here we've already gone through. Jeez, folks, I'm having a hell of a time here tonight. Well, let me see here. Okay, here we go. This is what I was looking for. This is by Sean Tandon, down off the AFP, the Agence France-Presse. The United States insisted today it bore no grudge against Afghan President Hamid Karzai as it rolled out the red carpet for him in following public spats that have cast a shadow over joint war efforts. After chiding Karzai for months over alleged corruption and vote rigging, U.S. officials hoped the four-day visit and Barack Obama will help forge personal bonds and a better working relationship. The U.S. ambassadors to Kabul, Carl Eikenberry, who had authored a scathing leaked memo that questioned Karzai's reliability as a partner, flew with the Afghan leader to Washington and said interests were never better aligned. Though the talks over the next several days, I think we're going to emerge with even better alignment, Eikenberry told reporters at the White House. Afghanistan is a close friend and ally, and of course I highly respect President Karzai in that capacity, he said. Richard Holbrooke, the envoy for Pakistan and then Afghanistan, who had had particularly tense ties with Karzai, personally greeted the Afghan leader as he landed early Monday. There was a period when the waters got roiled, Holbrooke said afterward. What I will say categorically, that period ended. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will welcome Karzai with a dinner at the Blair House, the official guest house access from the White House. The visit comes as the U.S. military gears up for a crucial new stage of Obama's strategy to surge 30,000 extra troops into Afghanistan in a bid to defeat the Taliban and allow U.S. forces to start coming home next year. General Stanley McChrystal, the top NATO commander in Afghanistan, told the White House news briefing, "I have confidence that our campaign will succeed." But he warned that as U.S. forces pressed on with critical military aspects of the plan, there would be increased violence. While few believe that U.S. concerns about Karzai have disappeared, the Obama administration has made a concerted effort to treat the Afghan leader with greater respect, seeing little to gain from deteriorating relations. Yeah, this goes on and on about the rest of it. No need to get into that. Folks, Obama is dissing Karzai in a bad way. He's dissing all of Afghanistan over there. I mean, look, when is this surge really going to take effect? You know, what's happening here? I mean, we heard where he came right out and gave us the date on what we're moving and blah, 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 blah. And it's almost like nobody remembers it. He's going to have to understand something. He's got to get the people in that country to start living in a fashion of dignity, in a fashion of independence, many, many different things. Now, grant you, 30,000 more troops, personally, I believe it would help too. But you got to get rid of these rules of engagement. Got to get rid of a lot of things over there. You've got to go over there. You've got to push these people into submission. I hate to say it in just such a manner. Put them into submission. Take away whatever it is that they're doing and reteach them how to live lives the same way Americans do. That's right, I said it. Sorry, folks. You know, we shouldn't be nation building. We have no choice but to nation build here. No choice whatsoever. You know, I'm convinced of this, and I'm all those ones out there that said, we never should have been nation building. Bush never should have engaged in it. We have no choice, folks. We have no choice whatsoever. Al-Qaeda is nation building. That is exactly what they are doing. The various Islamic radical groups around the world are nation building. They are building their own version of their own one-world government with them in charge. That's all the recruits in places like this because they are dirt poor. They are dirt poor because they have not been taught how to use their resources. And despite the fact that there are some efforts going on over there, but the fact of the matter is, you know, you just basically got to go in there, you got to take over, and you got to teach them how to live like us. You got to take their court systems, turn them into court systems just like the same ones here. Got to teach your police over there to act the same way the police do over here. You got a lot of things to do, and you got to teach them that they got responsibilities to themselves. You got to teach them a little bit of self-dignity, you know, which means let them open up. Have a nice government that's there, that's strong, that's in control, but allow the people to live their own lives. Allow them some measure of liberty, you know, that they did not have before, which means increase their liberties. You know, get them on a path towards true and free liberty, same as we used to have here. You know, we'll fight our battles here, but this is what's got to happen over there, folks. doesn't happen, we're all sunk. There's no doubt about it. All right, with that, folks, we're at the bottom of the hour here. I got to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe, www.earncode.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Folks, we'll be right back.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com. Which, by the way, folks, I meant to mention tonight, this is the 8th anniversary of this show. Yes, Bob out in Hawaii sitting there wondering, geez, where did all the time go? This is 8 years on the air. We've been at it, yeah, since 2002. it's been a long time, man. But, hey, it's still going strong, folks. Yeah, I'm still here, still keep my eye on everything out there that I can. Let you know my views on things, what's going to happen, what should be happening. It's craziness reigning supreme, but here we are, baby. I still can't get over 8 years old tonight. yes, it was on this week back in 2002. The show got started up. All right, just had a little bit of breaking news come in from Australia from my buddy Mr. Flute over there and his buddy Mr. Tiger Burt. Were telling me that you guys are having an overcrowding of your who are now being put up in hotels. Did I get this right? Let me ask you something. How much are they allowed to have for room service each night? It's, you know, what's happening there, huh? Now, this is not a false PL4, but listen, I got to flip the mic over there to you, Mr. Flute. I got to hear this.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, and to all out there. This is Mike from the top of Australia. Since Kevin Rudd got into office 2 years ago, he changed his policies on illegal immigrants. Since then, we have literally got thousands heading our way. The UN say there are about 40,000 en route, mainly from Sri Lanka and Afghanistan, which in code means anywhere from the Indian subcontinent. Many of these people claim to be, you know, from Afghanistan, and they could be from Mumbai or Goa. The same with Sri Lanka. Most of them are economic refugees. Now, these people that are trying to land in Australia illegally. Australia takes plenty of immigrants and a lot of refugees. I think per capita we're about the highest to take in refugees. An interesting fact that I can't verify, but recently commentators announced here in Australia it cost $56,000 in the first year to house and look after a refugee. Our old age pensions are about $16,000 a year, and really it's survival money. So at this point we're treating our illegal entrants 3.5 times better financially than we're treating our old age pensioners, the people that built this country. Now, what we have at the moment is that our detention centres are full. We can't cope with the arrivals. And so our government secretly hired a motel in Brisbane. Apparently it has about 80 people there, or maybe 80 adults. This is right next door to a kindergarten and across the road from a private school, a junior high school. Now, not even the local police were advised that these people would be arriving there. Now, if they're illegal aliens, now, from what they can gather, apparently these are safe illegal aliens. But if these people have a vested interest in lying about their circumstance, do we really know? If they're eligible for citizenship, then fine. But the government aren't saying this. This hotel is, motel is surrounded by security people, and the estimates are it's costing at least $100 per adult per day. Now, that's nearly standard accommodation rates for that area, and yet they're also having meals and 6 to 8 per day per illegal immigrant. I would hazard that it'd have to be somewhere like $400 a day by the time they're fed and secured and washed and showered and televisioned and air conditioned. Now, this is a different way of dealing with illegal immigrants. We don't, unlike the USA, we don't have a land border. But these people are still arriving by little boats, and the recent couple of recent stunts have been when the Australian Navy has approached these people. They have tried to scuttle the boats, so they have to be rescued. They've threatened to drop children overboard. We're talking babies here. If the Australian government tries to tow them back from whence they came. And we've got other governments in that region that are basically hand-passing them along. Now, we're working with Indonesia to try and stem this tide, but there are apparently 40,000 that are registered with the UN as with their refugee status, and at least another 40,000 that haven't registered. Now, those that haven't registered, we really can assume that they have traceable, trackable criminal records or other reasons to try and lie their way into Australia. So yeah, it's a national problem for us, but not dissimilar to what's happening in the United States. I would like to hand back now to the host, Mark, or perhaps even over to Tiger Bert if he organises it.
Let me ask you a quick question here, before Tiger, and definitely Tiger, I want to hear your take on this too. But now, like America, one of the things that happened to combat this were the formation of the Minutemen. I don't know if you remember this or not, but there were a lot of guys that were on the border just saying, hell with it, we're going to stop it ourselves if they're not going to do it. And that was quite the organization. I mean, they were strong. you know, performing your own watch down there. Has anything like that started to happen out in Australia? Because, you know, I could just imagine the banks lined up with Crocodile Dundees, you know, picking off small boats out there. Is anything like that taking place yet?
Interestingly, I'll take the story back to the 1970s. During World War II and for a time afterwards, say up until 1950, the Australian government armed Aboriginal people with Lee Enfield 303s and basically warned them, told them to protect the coastline. We're talking very, very remote here and very traditional people in an area which I lived up until recently. It's about 500 miles from me, and it's right on the Australian, northern Australian coastline. Anyway, in the 70s, when the Vietnamese people started to arrive, there's reported incidents that the Aboriginal people thought that the Japanese were coming back and literally had them at gunpoint or shot at them. So there was a big kerfuffle and a run around all of these communities and asked the Aboriginal people to hand back their canvas-wrapped 303 rifles that they had buried just in case. Now, also living in that area, it became quite amazing. Like, this is a town of 4,000 people. We finished up with nearly 80 little Indonesian boats in the harbour. Now, there's no suggestion that these people weren't fishing traditionally. They were fishing illegally. But we don't know if they had any boat people with them. I certainly can't remember any. But it makes you wonder, like, these people were actually hiding in Australian rivers. Now, the problem is Australia is an island, and we are trying to protect our biosecurity. So whilst we can handle losing a few, say, snapper or octopus or trepang or shark fins, we couldn't handle an introduction of foot and mouth disease or some of the myriad of animal and some human diseases that are very close to our shore. So they used to bring these boats in, and a friend of mine used to have a job to sit on outside these boats with a shotgun and shoot the rats that jumped off them as they were being burnt. Now, we couldn't burn them at sea because of international pollution regulations. But I don't see those boats coming into harbour anymore, and I do believe the Australian Navy has they won't tell, but has a policy of offloading the Indonesian fishermen and cutting the boats in half with a 50 calibre machine gun and then setting fire to anything that floats. So, you know, they're basically towing them back out to sea. Now, the Indonesian fishermen are locked up, but whilst they're in Australia, I think until they're found guilty, they're entitled to the equivalent of our unemployment benefit. And so a lot of these fishermen soon worked out that Australian unemployment benefit is better than Indonesian wages. So they were quite happy to spend a couple of months in jail, and they would go home with what they considered a fortune. Now, I know I'm wandering off the track here, but the Australian Navy is under huge pressure to stop these people arriving. And they head for an Australian island called Christmas Island, which is, I think, about 200 nautical miles south of the island of Java in Indonesia. I'll probably never talk about it, but this had a great stand told
Sorry about that there, my friend, but you were breaking up. You seem to have lost your connection. Very interesting story that you're telling there, though. Very interesting. I would never have thought of something like that. You Aussies do figure things out. Now, I mean, it's amazing how you got those Australian fishermen to do that to begin with, you know. But now look at the Indonesian fishermen you're catching. So all you got to do, you're having a bad catch with the boat, is head back over towards Australia there, and hey, don't worry about it. We don't have to worry about how many fish are in the boat tonight. Filet mignon, champagne. This is unbelievable. All right. All right, listen, we got somebody here named Pie and Ice Cream. Gonna got her hand up, got a question or a comment. Pie and Ice Cream, I will definitely throw the mic right over to you if you're still there.
Thank you, BB. Much appreciated. The reason I keyed up is I wanted Natalie Vino Traveler to hear my voice to see if she's heard it before. And I wanted to say hi to Tiger Bert, Don Chicago, Kiss, and Flute in here. Anyway, I just wanted to say good evening, everybody. I'm finding this very interesting.
Oh, thank you very much for stopping by. Yeah, all right. No, I am amazed. I'm amazed. Interesting to see how the Australians will resolve the situation here. Now, let me ask you this. How come these people aren't being deported? Is it because you just can't figure out where it is you're supposed to deport them to, or what? I mean, imagine that might be a tough thing if you got people coming out of places where there's very little registration of births and things like that. You know, where people don't really exist on government censuses or what have you. It might be a tough nut. What do you do with somebody like that? Tiger Bert, you got your hand up.
It's not a question that we cannot deport them. The question is that we have a federal government, maybe, that changed the rules. And since every time we have a Labour government, these things happen. Look, we have... Only within the last 24 hours, our Australian Navy has seized another two boatloads of so-called asylum seekers, a total of 120. And we have reopened in South Australia a new, well, it's not a new, but it's an air base, and just outside the air base, we've had... to reopen that detention center, which is isolated. We also have a number of thousands of them at Christmas Island. We've got them at Port Hedland. But I have to blame the Rudd government for allowing such a number to come in. It's more or less told them you can. And it's about time that we got rid of this federal government. This federal government is spending money, as Flute said, compared to what we are giving to the pensioners, to these people that are coming, so-called asylum seekers. We don't even know who they are, because most of them, let me tell you, most of them have destroyed their means of identification. And the federal government is also, according to what they tell us, which I know it's a lot of BS, that they have in fact given so millions of dollars to Indonesia. But these asylum seekers come through Europe to Malaysia, from Malaysia to Singapore, Singapore to Indonesia. Not only that, we also have a problem with the illegal fishermen from Indonesia. Our customs and Australian Navy do in fact seize them. We burn their boats. We bring them, we charge them, we put them in jail, we fine them, and we deport them. But we have a federal government, which is a Labour federal government, that lies to the people. And we are in a state in the moment, as I said earlier to... I explained something to Natalie before, that some of us have been recruited to deal with these illegals. As for Palm Island, I think you mentioned Palm Island, did you, Flute? We do have a large coastline that is very hard to, in some ways. Oh, Christmas Island, yeah, well, that's what I'm... Christmas Island, well, in Christmas Island we have over 2,060. We've extended the Christmas Island detention centre. But I still have to blame the federal government. And the federal government at the moment is in big trouble on a number of fronts. But I have to admit, Flute, I believe what you said about this hotel in Queensland, but it's the first I hear of it. and it makes it very, very hard and difficult. We have that Senator Sherry, he's a creep, as you know. He was trying to introduce this baby, let me tell you. He's trying to introduce Sharia Islamic law in banking. Would you believe that? But he's going to be in a worse state than anyone else. We've also had a problem came up too regarding Muslims. And by the way, before I forget, before I go on to Muslims, the federal government made it very clear and told us, and which we think it's a lie, they put a cap that no Iraqi, no Afghani, Sudanese and Yemeni to enter our country. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't seen anything contrary to what the government has told us. But we do know that the federal government, the red government, does lie to us. And his his rating has fallen to hell of a lot. And I think by the end of this year he will be out of office. And his cronies that are with him. We've also had a survey taken by Channel 7 and Channel 9 because some of the politicians have brought the issue regarding Muslim women wearing head face cover and headdress. Yesterday it was published by Channel 7 that 97% of Australians voted yes, let's ban it. Only 3% said no. The only radio talkback station, which is a creep in my book, and that's Neil Mitchell of 3AW. So we have a few things here to deal with. But we do deport them. We do deport them. But it takes time because, first of all, and it's true what Flute said, they do throw kids overboard. They do set their own boats on fire. And our Navy has to rescue them because it's against the law not to rescue them. And we also have the United Nations, which I never liked in the first place, and our federal government, the Rudd government, seems to cave into them. It is a problem, but hopefully by very, very soon, within the next 6 months, we will be dealing with these so-called asylum seekers pretty fast, and we will deal with them severely. Pastor Mike, thank you.
All right, well, thanks a lot. Interesting report there, Mr. Tigerbert. I'm not totally amazed, you know. These people flee these countries because of their dictatorships, you know, generally collectivist in nature. I'm totally amazed at the people talking about bringing in Sharia law to your banking. Now, I've seen this going around, and I have seen I've seen websites, and I've seen some of the news agencies out there touting this Sharia law. And the thing about it is, it looks real good. All of us, you know, right up front, because everything they use is real. They only use gold. They only use silver. But the fact of the matter is, nobody owns that gold or silver. You don't. The bankers own it. You know, there's very little to be owned at all. You know, they pay back without interest, but, you know, you gotta really look into it. But it's not something that you really want to get yourself involved in, because in the end, the banking system ends up owning everything. You know, and you basically pay for the use of everything, you know, even the food and whatnot that you're eating. Not a good situation. You know, you got to be thankful to them for everything, which means you got to be thankful to God. Well, they'll tell you got to be thankful to God for everything, but, you know, in reality, they want you to be thankful to them. That's no way to go there, but I hear what you're saying. It can't happen. Things will go down like that. It's terrible, though. Wait to see what happens in the future here, where it comes, you know. Amazing that you're finding people coming from all over the place. They're telling you that they're not coming out of Afghanistan and whatnot, but it's like you say, once you get to your shores, how are you going to prove not? You know, somebody just sits there and keeps his mouth shut. What are you going to do? You know, where do you begin to apply? You know, is there an international agency out there? You would think the United Nations, if it really wanted to perform a service, would have something like that. But I would bet you dollars to donuts that they do not. All right, Mr. Flew, you want to add to this? Go right ahead.
Yeah, just stop me again if I'm breaking up, but I wanted to finish. I did have a little personal stake in this. I used to read the Frontier Post from Pakistan, and I realised on their front cover of their internet newspaper, they advertised travel to Australia. Like this is in Waziristan and places like that. And I thought, what are those people going to do when they get to Australia? And I realised they were basically advertising as people smugglers. This was right on the front page and on page three, like prime advertising space. So I forwarded it to Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs, and they thanked me very much. And it took about 6 months when those ads were replaced by Department of Foreign Affairs ads from Australia showing crocodiles with huge big teeth and poisonous snakes and spiders and all that. And it literally had a huge effect. When these people realised they were going to have to cross, get through all of these hazards. Now, you mightn't be able to scare an Afghani with a big snake, but you can with a big crocodile. And it literally slowed up the immigration from that area for a time. Anyway, I'll hand back to you, Mark, and thanks for your time.
Hey, that's funny. That's funny. All you got to do is just say, hey, you go over there, the crocodiles are going to get you. Yeah, that would slow them down, no doubt about it. They got sea monsters over there. Uh-huh. You know, these people are very susceptible to pictures like that. You know, let me tell you something. For a long time here, one of the hottest selling cars was the mid-70s into the early 80s, the Chevrolet Impala, the big old four-door Chevy Impala. Not, you know, it's just your common, it was still the large American car here, you know. But as they got older and got beat up, they were just like everything else, worth $100-$200. But if you had one that was actually fairly clean looking, and still might have been worth maybe $1,000 here. There were guys here in America who were selling them to the Saudi Arabians for huge dollars. It was worth it for them to spend $1,000 for a clean one here and stick it on a boat and send it to Saudi Arabia, because they were getting anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 and $15,000 for them over there. And the whole reason for it, believe it or not, was because of these billboards over there that had a picture of that Chevy Impala on it and a tank behind it. And they all thought that the damn cars were just as strong as tanks, so everybody had to have one. And it was one of the hottest selling units, you know. I met one of these guys who came into my lot on a regular basis looking for them. You know, you get any of them old buggers in here yet? No, and every now and then we would get one. And he only took a couple of them weren't really shaped for fit for anybody, you know. Sometimes at the car dealership, a car like that, they will generally drive them into the ground. And one of the funny things here, and it's funny, you know, that you've never acted this way, old folks, that never got passed on, was A, how to haggle a deal with anybody, you know, how to go in and beat them down and get your best price, which was always just to make sure that he understands that you're there to do business today. And you learn how to flash a little bit of money under their nose and say, yeah, I'm here, you know, where are you going to go? You know, and really get a car dealer to come down on stuff. But when they were done with the car was done. The next step for that car was going into the junkyard. You know, people would come in with a car that they had bought brand new and drove it for 15 or 20 years and just drove it into the ground. You know, it was dust. There was no more driving to be had out of that car. You know, and it's a lot of people don't do that. You know, it's people buy cars. Chris, the market is loaded with cars out there that are 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years old. There's plenty of life left in them. You know, and old folks, they like that. You know, they bring you a car, baby. That sucker's ready for the junkyard. You know, might be all worth all of $1 to you. It was funny, and that was the way my boss used to make us look at it, too. He said, if you can't get one of the wholesalers to give you $100 for that car, he said, put $1 on it, and we'll junk it. But you got to put at least $1 on it. It was funny. So, I mean, no matter what it was that you were telling the customer that you were giving them for it. Of course, you know, that's all a big thing anyway. Anything that you're getting on that car is really coming off of the, whatever discount he has available on that car to give you. But that's a topic for another night. you totally. All right, pie and ice cream. I got about 3 minutes left here, and I'll give you two of them.
Thank you very much, BB. I just wanted to say I agree with Natalie when it comes to giving kids money for good marks. And for the other comment from Flute regarding bailouts, I don't believe a company like GM should have got the size of bailout that they got from the United States government. I think that's wrong, and they should be made to suffer. They should work on their own to get the money they need.
Well, this is true, but this is the problem with all socialist societies, that they get bailed out. I mean, you got to look at it this way, pie and ice cream. Well, I got a couple minutes here. You know, the whole world is getting into a problem right now because of the bailout and the socialization of the banking system that we have all accepted as reality. You know, we have accepted the fact that once you put money in the bank, you can never lose it. Well, that's just wrong. You know, I'm sorry. Everybody wants to think that their money is safe in a bank, but they're going to have to wake up and realize that it's only as safe as the bank is. If the bank is making bad loans, you have to understand that the bank is doing that with your money. You know, not the government's money. What we have basically done is socialize the banks out there to protect them, you know, from A, bad loans, and from B, from devaluing the currency and the resultant inflation and the fact that they might have deflation. You know, one of the normal economic cycles that have always occurred throughout mankind's history is something called deflation. Generally was what set off inflation. And deflation, as a rule, generally is not a bad thing. Deflation means that the prices of goods and services go down all across the board. When there's less money to spend on things like, you know, on things, and, well, just less money in the system, prices go cheaper. You'll start selling yourself and your products cheaper to get whatever it is that you can for them. It's just the way the world works. But it can happen. See, the problem with it is now is that we've written regulations so that that can't happen. Because when something like that does happen, you know, banks don't get paid. You know, if a bank lent somebody $1 million to build a factory, to hire people and build a product, and all that person can get for the end result sale of that product is $500,000, well, that bank just took $500,000 hit. You know, that's the way the real world works, you know, and if it's either going to have to keep coming up with more money to sink into this company in order to keep it afloat until perhaps it can pay it back, but it gets, you know, but if it can't, you know, if the prices of things keep on going down, they will never get their money back. So the laws have been written to protect them, to protect that from happening. You know, we've created things like the FDIC, you know, which is supposed to be able to protect all the money in your savings account. Well, that's fine, except for what happens when the FDIC can't cover its losses. Well, we got to go in and start writing legislation to bail them out, you know. And then once you're bailing out the banks, well, who's next? You know, the car companies are next. Who's going to be next after this? It's going to be insurance companies that provide health insurance. That's what the health insurance bill is all about. It's basically a huge, let's get set up to bail them out whenever necessary sort of bill. You know, and why people just can't get a grip on this, the pie and ice cream, I just can't explain it. I don't know. You know, it seems to me that it would be a very simple thing to figure out, but nobody wants to take a good hard look at it. You know, it's all, oh, we have to do this. What else can we do? You know, well, for years, mankind has been doing something about it and has always resolved itself back to something real, back to something with intrinsic value, back to something that you can actually use. You know, oh, those days will come again. Big question is always going to be this. You know, will mankind be smart enough this time to do it without violence? You know, he has always had these problems with the economy in the past. You know, Jesus Christ, when he threw the money changers out of the temple, was having the exact same problem. You know, when Moses wrote laws concerning the Jubilee years and the years for people that were allowed to be put themselves into bondage, you know, for terms of loans and whatnot. You know, it was back at the time of Moses. We're talking 6,000 years ago when this happened. People just have to understand that this is, you know, it's always happened in the past. The thing about it is, what's always happened in the past has always been that before these things became resolved, people got violent. You know, it was burning and a looting. all over again. People burning wheelbarrows of paper money or any other such worthless currency in the streets. That is what has always happened in the past. And, you know, that's the thing here. Is mankind going to be smart enough to figure this out, that what's happened in the past was that mankind made a huge mistake, you know, took something for currency that he shouldn't have, didn't learn from history before, history repeats itself, and just say, let's fix it once and for all, let's straighten it out, or is he going to allow the same cycles of history to repeat themselves, you know? Violence, changing out of governments, and finally it'll all resolve itself back to where it always did. At any rate, folks, that's the question, and it's time for me to close up shop here because we have gotten beyond the allotted time slot. So, folks, I want to thank you all for coming in. Once again, the tables are getting piled high with the chairs. The lights are going dim. The maitre d' is getting the place all cleaned up. The waitresses have already locked the doors and headed out of here. But as always, the bar will be open for a while. We're over here at Pal Talk. We are in Politics Lobby 4 Voice Room. You come on in for a little bit, probably open for another hour or so. And thanks once again for listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Good night, folks.